Welcome to Deep North, the podcast of Ice and Review, Iceland's longest-running English-language magazine. Today, we're going to be discussing a different story, an article by Elina Maurer, which covers a different way of learning the Icelandic language.
It's early Saturday morning, and normally I would have slept through the few hours of scarce brightness that bless us this time of year. During winter, it is far too easy to hibernate through the gloominess of Iceland's longest season. But this Saturday was different. Let's read and chat. The sun was slowly creeping its way out from behind the grey clouds on the horizon, and soon the sky turned bright blue. Glancing through the window, one might even be fooled that it was going to be a bright summer day. There's even an Icelandic phrase for this phenomenon, gluggaveður, or window weather, meaning that it looks delightful from the inside, but is actually dreadfully cold. I'm headed to an Icelandic learning event called Lesum og spjöllum, Let's Read and Chat, a series of happenings directed towards Icelandic learners of all backgrounds and levels. In my 4 years of learning Icelandic, the journey has had some ups and downs. While I took a single Icelandic course at a local language school shortly after my arrival on this barren island, I had hoped that Icelandic would just come naturally, without me having to spend a lot of time in classrooms. But Icelandic turned out to be a bit more difficult to master than all of the languages I had studied previously. To learn Danish and French, it was enough to lock myself in a room for a week straight and binge-watch entire TV series to start dreaming in the language. Although I'm a big believer in making language learning fun and easy, the common recommendation to read kids' books always hurt my ego and filled me with a slightly snobbish revulsion. So when my Icelandic mother-in-law presented me with Caritas Hrundar Pálsdóttir's short story collection Árstíðir, Seasons, for Christmas, a book specifically written for Icelandic learners, I felt like my thirst for my first real Icelandic book was finally quenched. I enter the big library building and head to the second floor. As soon as I see the small tower of mustard-colored Árstíðir books stacked on a library cart, I know I'm in the right place. Soon, people filter in. Some recognize and greet each other. The sun starts peeking in through one of the many windows overlooking Reykjavik Harbor. From where I'm sitting, I can catch a glimpse of the snowy Mount Esja, its pink hues a lingering memory of the winter sunrise. The assistant teacher, Isidora Glissisch, PhD candidate in Icelandic and Comparative Cultural Studies at the University of Iceland, starts the event by dividing us into reading groups according to level. I join the intermediate group and unpack my paperback edition of Árstíðir and its accompanying mustard workbook, published in November to expand on Árstíðir's short stories. When it's my turn to read aloud, my palms begin to sweat and I feel an anxious knot in my stomach. After a few words, I become more comfortable as I realize nobody will make fun of me if something is not pronounced exactly right. This event is a safe space and everyone has something in common. Everybody at Let's Read and Chat can relate to each other. We all left our lives behind in our home countries and had to reinvent ourselves in a new environment, among a new language and new people. We all came here to this windy island to find lives where we can thrive and become part of society and culture. And learning Icelandic is a crucial part of that process. Changing seasons. Caritas Hrundar Pálsdóttir understands this process quite well. She briefly lived in Denmark as a child, later moving to the US as a teenager, then to Tokyo for her bachelor studies in Icelandic and Japanese. Caritas has also spent time studying in Spain and is now based in Norwich, England, where she has just completed her PhD in creative writing at the University of East Anglia. Fittingly for her own language journey, her PhD project focused on the topic of migrants' re-entry and adaptation, also commonly referred to as reverse culture shock.
Sojourners are privileged migrants that go abroad to work and study temporarily and then return back home.
Caritas explains to me from some 2,000 kilometers away in Norwich.
So I'm looking at a sense of belonging and unbelonging, and questioning what home really means when you come back and are trying to fit back into your old reality.
Caritas continues, saying that
everyone acknowledges that adapting as an immigrant to a foreign place is difficult, but less attention has been given to the parallel phenomenon of readapting to your own country after having been that immigrant abroad.
She elaborates, her own experience as an immigrant in other countries and her love for languages and studies have inspired her to venture out into the language learning field herself.
Having that insight and learning the languages of the countries that I've lived in has given me a fresh perspective and influenced my interest.
Caritas speaks five languages, her native tongue Icelandic, as well as Danish, English, Spanish, and Japanese. One of her biggest achievements on her language learning journey was to finish her first short story in Japanese. Through that, she stumbled upon a niche demand for language learning materials for adult second language learners. Once Caritas returned to Iceland from Japan, she started her master's degree in creative writing at the University of Iceland, where she also worked as a teaching assistant.
Japanese exchange students in Iceland were telling me how they were trying to learn Icelandic and how they were working their way through news articles because that was the most available text for them.
Caritas quickly realized that there was a dire need for more reading material than just standard Icelandic language textbooks.
My approach and ideology is not that there's one right tool, but that we just need more variety. Children's books work for some people. Reading news articles works for some, but maybe flash fiction stories works for others.
And just like that, the idea for Ástíðir was born. A wealth of tales.
My approach is to write for adult audiences because they have a hard time finding material other than children's literature.
She tells me.
The approach in children's literature is different because often it's the subject that is simplified, but not the grammar and the vocabulary.
Suddenly, I finally understand my personal dislike for reading children's books. The short stories in Ástíðir are categorized by small designs created by the artist duo Krót og Krass, reflecting their level of difficulty. Additionally, the stories are divided into seasonal chapters, making it easy for readers to choose a story based on their level in Icelandic. The stories are, as flash fiction tends to be, quite brief, perfect for sometimes defeatist readers like me who appreciate the rewarding feeling of finishing their first entire story in Icelandic.
It's so empowering to be able to finish a story.
Caritas says.
The shorter the stories are, the more likely you are to get through one story and to do so quickly. But also, before you know it, you'll have read a whole book. So it's a bit more digestible, taking in one story at a time.
She smiles. In her flash fiction collection, the author focuses on current topics in Iceland and Icelandic society.
I was very conscious about having a variety in the protagonist's nationality, gender, sexual orientation, and ages. And I wanted to be aware of the core values in Icelandic society, like diligence and equality.
Personally, I found it quite remarkable, for example, to see a non-binary protagonist who uses the gender-neutral pronoun hon in one of Caritas' stories. It's important to see how these terms are actually used in spoken language. All too often, students learn vocabulary in the classroom, but never see it used in practical, everyday language. Caritas' stories capture the diversity of modern Icelandic culture and also include typical Icelandic slang words like joka, to joke, and googla, to google. Hardly words one might expect from a more traditional language resource. In Ástíðir, readers can find stories of notorious thorablót dishes, tales of Icelandic traditions like réttir, the annual sheep roundup, and even comedic dating anecdotes that make mention of the infamous Íslendingabók, an ancestry platform for Icelanders, as part of the well-rounded selection. As Caritas explains,
people learning Icelandic as a second language don't necessarily have anything in common except that they are learning Icelandic. So I tried my best to have a variety of sad, funny, mysterious, and thought-provoking stories within the collection.
The need for more. The success of Ástíðir led Caritas to write a second book of stories, Dagatal, Calendar, which came out in 2022 as an independent sequel to her debut. It captures everyday life in Iceland in addition to special Icelandic holidays like Bolludagur, Cream Puff Day. While Ástíðir is directed towards Icelandic learners at an A2 to B1 level, Dagatal also includes more advanced material. Caritas also knew from the beginning that she wanted to create additional learning material for students. Last November, she published a workbook to accompany Ástíðir, turning the read into a holistic learning experience. The workbook contains keywords, questions, and exercises to accompany each story. Keeping the stories and the hands-on workbook separate is crucial to Caritas.
I wanted the literature to be something that people read for pleasure, because that's one way you acquire language. But if you have the workbook, you can also go deeper into the structure of the stories.
The workbook was developed over years of testing.
It was made in collaboration with academics, teachers, and also with students themselves. It was really a dialogue with the community, so that was very valuable.
Caritas says, The Ástíðir workbook can be used both in a classroom setting as well for independent study and provides answers in the back. Caritas also intends to publish an ebook with additional exercises and language learning games that will benefit teachers using the material in classroom settings in the near future. She emphasizes that there is still much to be done for immigrant Icelandic learners.
I hope that Icelandic language learners will be part of that dialogue of demanding more government funding for projects and tools supporting them.
She tells me.
There are some nice initiatives in the making now. I hope that it's just the beginning and that there will be a lot more accessibility for language learners.
New initiatives. In November 2023, the Icelandic government announced a landmark initiative to strengthen the Icelandic language with funding of at least 1.4 billion Icelandic kroners. The initiative emerged from the work of a cross-ministerial committee on the Icelandic language established in 2022. The plan is broken down into 19 measures, one of which is making Icelandic lessons more accessible to full-time workers. This particular measure is quite important to Roman, one of my fellow peers in the library reading group. He's originally from Russia and has been attending these reading events for 4 years, since he moved to the capital area from the countryside.
After 8 hours of work, I'm not going to an Icelandic class in the evening,
he says and laughs. Many others in the group nod. Since finishing our short story from Ástíðir, we have moved on to talking about our personal experience of learning Icelandic. Isadora mentions an especially common problem that many Icelandic learners face. How many Icelanders switch to English as soon as they detect an accent?
It's like there's only one way to speak Icelandic and you're always told off if you speak differently,
she says. The participants mumble in agreement and share their experiences of this phenomenon. I remember several disheartening episodes of ordering ice cream at my favorite shop and how the teenagers working there would switch to English when they heard my accent. Kata, a young Hungarian woman, notes that while feedback from Icelanders is often appreciated, especially with regard to grammar, she wishes that Icelanders would make a habit of asking what language learners want to use, English or Icelandic. Kata first came to Iceland through a high school exchange program and stayed with an Icelandic family in Egilsstaðir, East Iceland, for 10 months. During that time, she learned about Icelandic culture and language quite rapidly, but admits that experiences vary quite a bit depending on where you're based.
I work with young people staying with Icelandic families during Erasmus exchanges, and the students in the countryside learn Icelandic much faster than the ones in Reykjavik.
Roman agrees.
People in the countryside are usually more willing to deal with broken Icelandic than Icelanders from Reykjavik because they don't like to speak English.
The consensus among the little group is clear. Instead of division, they want integration, community and cooperation. Another participant from Italy, Clara, suggests with a smile.
I would love to have an Icelandic granny to chat with in a nursing home. Old people are often very lonely and they often speak no English, so it would be a win-win.
While the direction of government initiatives is promising, many also want something simpler from the average Icelander. Patience. Patience is key. Having mastered 5 languages, I assume Caritas must have some secret tips. According to her, the real secret is to simply enjoy the learning process.
Watch movies, read books, go to the theater, listen to the radio, meet friends, have chats at coffee shops. All of this is language learning, as long as you're using the language. So just have fun with it and be patient.
Based on the laughter, talk, and new friendships formed here at the Reykjavik City Library this Saturday morning, I think she just might be onto something.
Well, that was really fascinating to read. As someone who's lived in this country for over 20 years, the Icelandic language is something I think a lot about, naturally. Mm-hmm. So I'm very curious to know, but I'm not from Europe. Like, we both speak Germanic languages, but English is quite different from Icelandic. I would say that English is even more different from Icelandic than German is from Icelandic. Mm-hmm. What was your inspiration exactly for wanting to delve into this?
Into the topic or learning Icelandic?
Yeah, into this topic.
Well, I received the book, as I mentioned, as a Christmas present a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And honestly, since I got access to all of the streaming services, I kind of just generally neglected reading. So reading for me is kind of like a chore, which I loved reading when I was younger. So I've been on the quest of getting back to that for years, just in English or German itself. But then reading something in a language where I'm not really good at is just something that's really hard for me, just to keep going. And then I heard that Caritas just published her workbook, and I remembered that I have the book laying around at home, and I was like, okay, maybe this is the moment where I should just sit down and start reading a little bit. And then once I just started reading, because the stories are so short, it's actually, as she said, it's super rewarding because you just suddenly finish four stories. You've read like, I don't know, 10 pages or something.
I see.
And it's just, it doesn't feel like any effort.
So how is your Icelandic? And don't be modest. Are you conversational in Icelandic?
Nah, I wouldn't say conversational. No, maybe on the way to be conversational. Like, I understand, if I'm around Icelandic people, I would say I understand most of their conversation. Maybe 80%, 75 to 80%. But then speaking is my big issue because I never really speak. I always feel like I'm 5 years old when I speak. And yeah, I'm always very shy and I question everything. Is this grammatically correct? And that just hinders me from just going out.
Hard same.
How is it for you? Like, you've been here for such a long time, and I feel like that's always so, I'm always very curious to meet like Iceland oldies, you know, who've been here. Like, not meant in any.
No offense taken. Well, for me, like, one of the biggest obstacles for me is something that Roman mentioned in the article, is that, like, nobody's got time to work a full-time job and, on top of that, perhaps even raise a family and go to Icelandic language classes. Now, to be fair, there are some private companies that will offer Icelandic language classes during the workday.
I have heard about this, yeah.
But this is the exception. Mm-hmm. It is not the norm. And, in fact, Icelandic linguists, such as, oh, God, what is his name? I kind of remember his name now, but like, the very prominent Icelandic linguists have been like practically begging the government, please provide Icelandic language classes during the day for immigrants, because Icelanders are very fond of talking very proudly about their language and how important it is to learn Icelandic. But when it comes to doing practical material things to help people who move here learn it, it seems like we're kind of like thrown into the pool before knowing. And that was kind of how it was for me. What I did, and I don't recommend this method at all, is I watched a lot of television. I watched a lot of English language television with Icelandic subtitles.
Okay.
And yeah. And then I compared this to what was I heard being said around me. Yeah. And then I would try to speak. And as was covered in this article, speaking Icelandic and getting spoken back to in Icelandic is perhaps the biggest hurdle to get over.
Yeah, it's so disheartening. Like, do you have, because I'm always, if I go somewhere, I'm always already thinking about what should I say if they just speak back to me in English? Do you have a perfect answer? Like, how do you react when this happens?
Well, I give it two replies.
Okay.
So, like, if I speak in Icelandic and I'm spoken back to in English, I speak Icelandic again.
Okay.
If I'm spoken back to Icelandic, then I say, getum við talað íslenskur saman. And it's really amazing.
Okay. Some,
because, like, most of the time they have this look on their face like they didn't even realize they were answering in English, or they didn't realize you were speaking Icelandic.
Yeah.
And they're like, I fit together. And then they start speaking Icelandic with you. But sometimes, and this has to be said, sometimes some Icelanders do this deliberately. It's unfortunate, and it's very rare, but it is a thing that, like, sometimes they'll do it deliberately just to remind you, you're not one of us, and I don't see you as one of us. Don't use our language. Like, they don't, a lot of Icelanders don't like to hear Icelandic spoken with an accent. I ran into this at one place that I worked at, where I was speaking Icelandic with my boss, and a coworker of mine was in the room, and she suddenly erupted and was like, I cannot stand listening to you speak Icelandic. I hate your accent. And I was like, okay, I'll just speak English from now on.
That's
like, what do you want?
Rude.
It is, but again, this is very, very rare. Yeah. That's the exception. Yeah. So I think that, like, the two-reply rule is usually what I stick to. And most of the time when I say, get them with talat isländskar salmon, they're more than happy to.
Okay.
And, like, they realize, like, oh, my God, like, what was I doing? I was being uncourteous, you know? Yeah. And then they're more than willing to speak Icelandic with you. So that's what I do.
Yeah.
But, again, it's a little unfair, though, because that kind of puts the onus on you. You know, it makes you responsible for them speaking Icelandic with you.
That's, I feel like it's just maybe not really known among Icelanders that, I mean, it has been more in the you know, in the societal discourse in the last year or two, maybe, or even 3-4 years, that there are many people who speak Icelandic with an accent, and they have gotten more used to people with an accent. I feel like it's just getting better with time. But I still feel like the common Icelander maybe doesn't know that it can be offensive to just kind of, you know, switch straight to English if they hear. Because I feel like there's no malicious intent mostly behind
most this reaction.
Most of the times.
Yes.
But they just kind of want to help or just want to make it easier. If you're ordering something and it's stressful in a shop, they just want to get it over with. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there should be more just common knowledge around this topic that people, if they start talking to you, and even if something's wrong, they are also there to practice. And I think they can also do their part in our working society to help you.
Certainly.
And
you're absolutely right. Like, the funny thing is that I've been living in Iceland. It'll be 25 years this September that I've been living in Iceland.
That's a long time.
And I have been hearing, Icelanders just aren't used to hearing Icelandic with an accent for 25 years. It's like at a certain point you got to stop using that excuse.
Yeah.
Erik Rögvaldsson, that's the name of the linguist.
Yeah, okay.
That I was, and he has been encouraging Icelanders as well, like, please respond to immigrants who are trying to speak Icelandic in Icelandic, because they're obviously making, like, despite everything, you know, that if they reach that point of, like, being feeling confident enough. Mm-hmm. And you're able to understand them, the very least you can do is answer them in Icelandic. And so I think the tide is turning where that's concerned. Like, but it's interesting, though. Like, do you have Icelandic friends, like, that you speak different languages with? Or do you speak English with all of them?
To be honest, I don't have too many Icelandic friends. I'm kind of more in the international scene of Reykjavik.
Yes.
Which I have tried to change a little bit. But, I mean, it's kind of also, I think, common knowledge for immigrants here. It can be difficult to meet Icelandic friends. Mm-hmm. But I speak with most of my friends just English or German, if they're German. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, kind of like maybe an Icelandic person. Like, the thing is, my boyfriend is Icelandic, and we don't even speak Icelandic together. Which is just kind of we're a bit lazy in that regards. But I think it's difficult if you met each other, you started talking English, to switch to another language. Where I'm on a level of maybe, I don't know, okay, realistically maybe level of a 7-8-year-old. I feel like there's just a kind of power imbalance that also kind of comes with it.
Whereas if you're both speaking like your second language,
then
you're kind of on an equal
level.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
But that was just my difficulty in incorporating speaking Icelandic just in my everyday life more and more. But every time it works, I'm super proud of myself, and it's a huge accomplishment.
Exactly.
So I'm just trying whenever I go out, order something, or just speak Icelandic and stick with it, even if it's wrong. And I started just recently losing a little bit of that kind of shame or like anxiety of speaking in a wrong way, either with an accent or incorrect grammar. Because I was thinking, it's maybe also, okay, most Icelandic people, they are very good and fluent in English.
Yeah.
Obviously, their mother tongue Icelandic. But then it's often the case that they also can't speak many more languages. So I feel like it's a great accomplishment if you just go out, you learn a new language, just that itself. Like, why can they complain? If you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Another thing I thought was really interesting in your article, was the people talking about how like they have an easier time getting Icelanders to speak Icelandic with them in the countryside.
Yes. Have you had an experience in the countryside? Or
I have.
Okay.
I lived in Akureyri for a year, wow. Which, I mean, it's not exactly the countryside. It's the second biggest town in the country. But I hitchhiked the entire ring road of the country 3 times.
When was that? Like, when did you live in Akureyri?
I lived in Akureyri in 2003.
Okay, wow.
But I hitchhiked the ring road in 2000, 2002, and 2013. Okay. And... yeah, I met people in the countryside, and it's true. Like, I walk into a shop, and especially in the early days, mm-hmm. like, before Eyjafjallajökull.
Yeah.
Because that's when the tourism boom really began.
Yeah.
I mean, there was tourism before then, but it didn't really start until we had a devastating volcanic eruption for some reason. But anyway, in the early 2000s, I'd be in the countryside, and I'd walk into, like, a gas station or something, or... mm-hmm. And the person behind the counter would see me, and you'd see, like, the panic in their face. Of like, oh, God, it's a foreigner. Like, no, I have to speak English. And I'd walk up the counter and speak Icelandic, and the relief that would wash over their face. Like, oh, thank God. Like, it was just really nice because wow. I had had this experience in Reykjavik of going to similar places and being responded to in English. Mm-hmm. But then they would start getting conversational about it, where they'd be like, how long have you been living in Iceland? You speak really good Icelandic, and that's very flattering, you know? Mm-hmm. It's very encouraging, yeah. Where, like, it makes you want to speak it more.
Mm-hmm. That's a great... I've never had that experience, but I've also not really lived more, you know, rurally. I know Akureyri is not rural, but hey,
yes.
From a Reykjavik point of view, it kind of is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably lots of hate comments coming in. No.
No.
I think it's quite interesting, though, that it is still there's such a big difference from the countryside to Reykjavik.
Mm-hmm.
Because now if you're just, I was just at the pool and there were just kids, teenagers, Icelandic teenagers in there, and they were just talking English the entire time.
Yeah.
And it was weird.
It is a little strange.
So I'm just wondering if, I don't know, it's kind of like a preserved time capsule maybe in the countryside, or if it's also going to slowly change. Because, I mean, they should all receive the same education, you know, like...
They do, they say I think that using English amongst young people is not a new thing in Iceland.
Okay.
Like, a lot of them will use English words or phrases, or even have whole-ass conversations in Iceland, in English, rather, sorry, because it's cool.
Yeah.
Because all the media they consume, the music they listen to, the movies they watch, the television shows they watch, the YouTube channels they watch, all in English.
Yeah.
So with, and Icelanders love the internet. And so like folks in the countryside, you would think they'd be more apt to do this as well.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a generational thing.
That could be the case. Maybe it will also shift, you know, the more the older generation dies out and then the younger one.
That could be, but I'm honestly not worried about the future of Icelandic.
Okay, yeah, that's a big issue. Many people are very worried that it's going to die out. English will replace Icelandic. Why are you not worried?
Because we demonstrably have more Icelandic speakers every year.
That's true. With immigration coming, more and more.
Well, also Icelanders having babies, like people being born in Iceland.
Yeah, yeah.
There's just the population of the country continues to grow.
Yeah.
And a lot of that population is based on people who are born here and speak the language. There are statistically, demonstrably, factually more Icelandic speakers every single year.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, ipso facto, the language is not dying just because teenagers grow up. Teenagers go through fads and go through, like, there's a lot of stuff that I loved doing when I was a teenager that I grew out of.
Yeah.
Like, I don't expect that these kids are going to grow up to be adults that are going to be sitting around having English conversations.
No.
You know?
I mean, they're also going to start jobs at mostly maybe Icelandic companies.
Yeah.
And then It's just exactly. A phase, maybe.
It's just these generational wars are just, I find them so exhausting.
Yeah. I feel like the older you get, the more you kind of are automatically pushed into like, oh, these teenagers, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Like into that kind of thinking. But I mean, yes, the population of Iceland is growing and language is constantly evolving. So
yes. That's a very important point.
Yes.
Language evolves.
Yeah.
Like there was in the 1970s or 60s, there was an Icelandic tense called Vier. Mm-hmm. And that was like a plural we that is not used anymore.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know about this.
And I wonder sometimes if like people were like complaining that the language was dying when this fell out of favor. I mean, it might actually go back further than that. Vier, yeah. There was like Thier, Mier, Vier. It was like a collective we form.
Yeah.
And, you know, language changes like that. Mm-hmm. Like there was once upon a time, the English language itself used to have all the grammar rules that Icelandic has.
Yeah.
But English, we also had four tenses. I cannot read Old English.
Yeah.
I could barely read Middle English.
Yeah.
You know, like but it's still English.
Yeah.
It has changed over time. And so I think that's an important point. You know, you're saying Iceland, like language evolves.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important thing to remember.
Maybe.
But when it comes to immigrants in Iceland, like I really enjoyed this article a lot.
Thank
personally,
you.
Because it's really cool to see like people who are trying to learn the language being very candid about the challenges that they face.
Yeah.
You know, like and because it is a difficult language to learn. Like, I wouldn't trust myself to write in Icelandic. I can have conversations in Icelandic, and there's a lot of friends that I do have conversations with in Icelandic, but it's a hard language to learn. And I think that as long as we have this conversation, as Caritas had mentioned, of Icelandic learners talking about the challenges that they face, as long as there's people in a position of power listening,
that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then hopefully something can change and we can maybe get language lessons during work hours or during day hours and just more funding, more support, Icelanders being patient when you try to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And just more of an openness and inclusion in the Icelandic society. I think that would be the key for us all.
Absolutely.
Thank you for our chat.
Thank you. This has been Deep North, Iceland Review's official podcast. Thanks very much for listening. Have a wonderful day.